This evening, Isabel MacDonald is here at the CFRU station with me in Guelph. And Isabel is a freelance journalist and former communications director of the group Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. Her investigative journalism covering foreign policy and migration issues has been published by The Nation magazine, The Guardian, and El Diario, amongst other publications, and it also has been featured on ABC Good Morning America, Democracy Now!, and Radio Canada. She also has written about issues of media and democracy for academic journals such as Journalism Studies, Race and Class, and Canadian Journal of Communication. How does the public know Lou Dobbs?
Lou Dobbs really made himself an emblem of this very get-tough approach to immigration in his years as a host of a nightly show, Lou Dobbs Tonight, on CNN.
Mm-hmm. You've written this article. It was published on the site, The Investigative Fund, which is a project of the Nation Institute. It was published on the site on October 7th, 2011, and it's called Lou Dobbs, American Hypocrite. As well, it was published by The Nation magazine, so you can also find it at thenation.com. And there's a Spanish language version that appeared the same day as when it went online at The Nation in El Diario, which means the daily in Spanish. And El Diario is a New York-based Spanish language daily. In November 2009, Lou Dobbs left CNN. How did that happen?
Right. So Dobbs had been with CNN for over 20 years. He was one of the most prominent people on the network, and he had become a real flashpoint in the immigration debate. As the group where I formerly worked, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, and many other groups had documented, he had a long record of misinformation about immigrants and fear-mongering that particularly targeted undocumented immigrants. And amongst the many inaccurate claims he made, he charged that undocumented immigrants were responsible for an epidemic of leprosy in the United States. This epidemic did not exist. It was fully invented. He twisted statistics, inflated numbers very, very dramatically to make this claim. He then stuck by it over the course of many subsequent shows. His show, Lou Dobbs Tonight on CNN, originally made this claim. He then went on to defend this inaccurate picture he had painted on other TV networks, maintaining that if he had reported it, it must be a fact. But it wasn't a fact. It was well documented that it was not a fact. He also made inaccurate claims linking immigration and violent crime. Again, completely unfounded. So by 2009, he had really established himself as what many people in the Latino community referred to as the number one enemy of Latinos in America. Now, it so happened that CNN was coming out with this series called Latino in America that was widely seen as an attempt by CNN to cater to a growing demographic in the United States. And it was modeled on a previous CNN series called Black in America. And so it was CNN's way of reaching out to this minority community and claiming to represent the lives of America's Latinos. However, they still had Lou Dobbs on the air every single night. And apart from his record of inaccurate claims about imaginary leprosy epidemics, he also referred to immigrants on a routine basis as an invasion. He talked about the invasion of illegal aliens repeatedly on CNN. And there were two coalitions that came together around the time of the launch of CNN's Latino in America series. One of them called Basta Dobbs, a coalition of Latino groups and very grassroots immigrant rights groups from across America. And they did this extraordinary work of translating Lou Dobbs into Spanish so that everybody knew just what he had been saying about immigrants and about Latinos. And they created this extraordinary little video that pulled together clips from CNN's promotional video about their upcoming Latino in America series and spliced it with the clips of some of Dobbs's worst hits targeting Latinos and immigrants and portraying them as some kind of menace to America. And this video just went viral. There was an online petition calling on CNN to fire Dobbs. Simultaneously, another campaign called Drop Dobbs was launched by a large media monitoring group called Media Matters for America and several DC-based immigration reform groups like America's Voice. And they joined this call with their own petition calling on CNN to fire Dobbs. And in the fall of 2009, in the midst of these campaigns, which incidentally had organized, in the case of Busted Dobbs, they'd organized protests in 18 cities across the U.S. targeting CNN studios, announcing in the media very clearly, CNN, you can't have it both ways. Either you care about Latinos as an audience or you have Dobbs. You can't have Dobbs and also be purporting to represent Latinos. This really overshadowed the launch of this new CNN series. Most of the media coverage about the Latino in America series talked about these extraordinary campaigns targeting Dobbs. So in the midst of these campaigns, Lou Dobbs, completely out of the blue, went on air and announced it was his last show ever on CNN. And he claimed that he had been listening to people who were talking about how he had some higher calling and he had contributions that it would be very worthwhile if he made to American democracy. He talked about finding, he wanted to find solutions and foster debate, and he had this greater role than his show at CNN. But it was widely recognized that it was really about the pressure that activists had succeeded in putting on CNN. And it was claimed as a victory by Busted Dobbs and by the Drop Dobbs campaign because their pressure had succeeded in what many people had been trying to do for a very long time, which was to pressure CNN into dropping this host who had made his name bashing immigrants in the media.
Well, career-wise, all I can see is Dobbs taking giant steps down. This past March 21st, 2011, the show Lou Dobbs Tonight debuted on the Fox Business Network, which is a huge leap downwards. Fox Business Network is a fledgling U.S. cable news and satellite news television channel and has low viewership numbers. There has been talk of Dobbs considering a Senate run or mulling a 2012 presidential run, which are the only things I could imagine he was referring to when he publicly professed that he needed to answer to his higher calling.
A Senate or even presidential run?
As late as, I mean, since his departure from CNN, he's continued to make regular appearances on TV, especially on the Fox News Network. And on one of the most widely watched Fox News programs, Sean Hannity's show, he announced as late as March 2010 that he had not ruled out the idea of running for the presidency of the United States or for Senate in the 2012 election. So this was something that Dobbs was really entertaining as an idea. And the fact that he is now relegated to the Fox Business Network, which is a network launched by Rupert Murdoch within the last few years that has very, very low audience ratings, so it's just not watched by very many people, represents an enormous step down from where Dobbs had been at CNN with a primetime show that at one point commanded more than 800,000 viewers.
He's been there for over a quarter of a century.
Yeah.
So Isabel, with regards to your article, Lou Dobbs, American Hypocrite, the article talks about Lou Dobbs' family horses and his lavish estates. Talk about why Dobbs' lifestyle choice to live in extravagance is dependent on poorly paid migrant labor.
Yeah. So, I mean, Lou Dobbs really epitomizes an approach to talking about immigration in the American media that vilifies immigrants and that also vilifies people who hire undocumented immigrants. So it's sort of a model of looking at the problem of immigration through primarily a lens of crime and punishment. So immigrants who are working without papers are seen as a criminal problem. This was reflected in pretty much every single night of Lou Dobbs's program on CNN, where he consistently painted immigrants as a criminal problem that needed a stronger enforcement. This was an issue that needed tougher border control, so the building of a giant fence, more workplace raids. And what my article tried to do was to show that fundamentally this is a very wrong-headed way of looking at immigration. It ignores the fact that immigrants are interwoven with the fabric of America's economy and society. And the article got a lot of pickup, including on, as you mentioned, on ABC, Good Morning America. Dobbs and I debated each other on MSNBC. And a lot of journalists in the mainstream media were most interested in this story because here we have the case of Lou Dobbs, who's gone on for years on CNN about how illegal immigration is a problem that needs to be tackled with this tougher approach, with tougher enforcement, tougher laws, more arrests. And he himself, who claims to have an expertise in this subject matter, had clearly been unable in his very own life to organize his demand for labor in such a way that he was not relying on undocumented immigrants. So in my article, what I showed was that through interviews with people who had worked with Lou Dobbs's horses, who'd worked caring for Lou Dobbs's horses, because he has dozens of horses, including several $1 million or more horses that require basically around-the-clock care, also interviewing people who cared for the grounds of his estate, one of his two estates in Florida. He has another estate in New Jersey. I showed that Dobbs, for years, has relied on undocumented labor for the upkeep of his property. And so I guess the larger point that I was wanting to drive home, including and especially, in fact, in the mainstream media, was that there is a fundamental flaw with the way that the American media, and most particularly the kinds of journalists or pretend journalists of the kind embodied by Lou Dobbs, there's a fundamental flaw with that whole mode of discussion about immigration. And in the case of Lou Dobbs, what the story really drove home was that everything he said about immigration in his years on CNN was completely cut off from the reality of even his own life, the reality of the need for immigrant workers in his very own backyard. And I don't mean that figuratively. It was very literally in his backyard in Florida. There were undocumented workers who were caring for his property. And the larger point that this gets at is the question of the effect of that kind of rhetoric that paint immigrants as a criminal problem on the lives of the people who support the lifestyle of people like Lou Dobbs. Because for them, America's immigration policies, and especially the kind of enforcement mechanisms that Dobbs has championed over the years, make their lives extremely difficult, make them extremely vulnerable, make them extremely isolated, especially if we look at rural areas where many of his horses are cared for instance, rural Vermont. The fact that people are not given authorization to do the work for which there is such a clear demand for them, for their work, means that they don't have the chance to have a driver's license. They can't go and do their own shopping. They can't visit friends. They are living lives that are extremely, extremely isolated. They're cut off from seeing their families because there's a great fear if they go back over the border. All of these workers that cared for the horses are Mexican. There were also some Guatemalan workers who were involved in caring for the grounds of his property in Florida. So people are cut off from their families. They can't go back to see their families because they're afraid that if they try to come back, they won't be able to. So really, it's the discourse that Dobbs espouses paints this very black and white picture. And the people who pay the highest price for that are the workers who he exploits to prop up his wealthy lifestyle.
You pointed out the reality that there's a demand for having migrant labor. Why do people who have citizenship in the West opt for migrant labor?
I mean, Lou Dobbs is representative of the type of person who is most reliant on undocumented workers because he has an extraordinary demand through his ownership of these million-dollar horses, through having two estates with hundreds of acres that require maintenance work. He creates an enormous demand for labor in the service industry, and it's an industry that is particularly, I mean, both the care of horses and landscaping are not very well remunerated based on the quantity of work, the extremely hard work that people have to put in. And in both of these industries, there is a huge role played by undocumented workers. And I think these are particular cases that create demand in the lives of some of America's wealthiest citizens. But we can also see similar issues of demand in many areas of the American economy, restaurants, childcare, construction as well. There are so many sectors of the economy, both in the U.S. and in Canada, that are highly reliant on undocumented labor. I think that the picture that people like Lou Dobbs have created, because they've been given this extraordinary media perch to put forth their views on immigration, is that this is something that, like, having these undocumented immigrants play this role in the American economy is something that hurts American workers. But I think from my experience talking to the workers who cared for Lou Dobbs' property and also talking to people who are experts on immigration policy and the economic effects of it, the solution to the problem of low wages would really come from giving people the chance to work legally. The people who fill a very important demand, giving them the chance to do that same work but with more adequate labor protection, for which legal status is quite indispensable. So I think that is how you can address the problem of workers being exploited. The most straightforward way is just to offer a path to citizenship, a path to residency for people who are currently working undocumented, and that will give them much better labor protection so that they will be able to fight for their rights. Because right now, if you're undocumented and you make a complaint about your employer, you're in a very precarious situation. And the law just does not, it basically allows for all kinds of violations of labor laws, the way that the current system operates, where people are pushed into the shadows. And I think one part of addressing these rampant labor rights violations in sectors where undocumented workers are prevalent, like in the landscaping industry and in the horse industry, is, in the U.S. context, some sort of path to legalization.
Mm-hmm. Contextualize why Lou Dobbs has a lot of family horses. Talk about that a little.
Yeah. So Lou Dobbs's family is heavily reliant on undocumented immigrants, partly because they are horse people. They have dozens of horses. Lou Dobbs has a horse farm on his estate in New Jersey. And his daughter is a competitive horseback rider. This is a sport that is really quite restricted to the super wealthy to compete at the level that his daughter Hillary Dobbs, who's about 22 years old, competes. You need millions of dollars a year to buy a horse of the kind that she rides. Starting price is about $1 million per horse. She has five of them. Mm-hmm. You also need to pay for stabling of these horses. And a huge part of what you have to pay for is the labor to care for these horses around the clock. The workers who cared for these horses, which are technically owned by her father, Lou Dobbs, the labor to care for these horses is extensive. The workers have to travel with the horses every year from Vermont, where they're stabled during the summer, to Florida, where they're stabled during the winter. Mm-hmm. they have to travel also across the country to all the shows that she competes in. Mm-hmm. If one of her horses gets sick in the middle of the night, workers need to be available to wake up and care for the horse right away, because these million-dollar horses can get gastric pain and suddenly die. And so then you're looking at like $1 million loss just like that if you don't have a worker on hand who can take the horse and walk it around outside, be with the horse until it's feeling better. So this is, I mean, it's a very specific form of leisure activity that most of us see as quite foreign, I think. But this is what Lou Dobbs, with the extreme wealth that he's managed to acquire from spouting fearful, erroneous misinformation on CNN about immigrants, he's managed to acquire this extraordinary wealth. He was paid about $6 million a year at CNN for his role doing, I wouldn't go so far as to call it journalism, but for his role hosting this nightly program that focused a lot on immigration, he was heavily rewarded for this. And so I think that's also the context. If you think, why does this guy have so many expensive horses that need so much care? In this twisted logic of the media system, he's been really compensated for the misinformation he's spread about immigrants and has been able to use that wealth to build this extraordinary wealthy lifestyle for which he relies heavily on undocumented immigrants who are the very people whose lives he makes so difficult with his hate-mongering rhetoric.
Mm-hmm. In doing the research for your article, again, titled Lou Dobbs, American Hypocrite, you uncover that there is a lot of labor rights violations on Dobbs's own estates. Talk about Dobbs's treatment of the migrant people he has employed.
Yeah, well, I think that in any sector of the economy where you have a large percentage of undocumented immigrants, you're likely going to have a lot of labor violations. And this is because these workers are systematically denied adequate protections. And they are the most vulnerable group of workers in society. So in the case of the horse stable workers who cared for Dobbs's horses, they were often putting in 12-hour days. They were not being paid overtime. They were also expected to be on call 24/7, they told me. They were sleeping above the barn where the horses were cared for. So in terms of their capacity to have lives that were separate from their work life, it was also very challenging. But then in terms of the clear labor violations, it was really in terms of mostly failure of their employer to pay them for overtime hours that they put in. Mm-hmm. And these would be often pretty extensive overtime hours, especially during horse shows where they would be expected to be waking up at 1 a.m. to unload horses from trucks and such things.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment that Dobbs has gained public appeal purporting to be a defender of American workers. However, lowering wages and deteriorating working conditions for migrants, both documented and undocumented, only promotes doing the same for the working class citizenry. What do you know about the process of becoming a legal employer of documented workers in the U.S.? In Canada, it's a lengthy and dreadful process. In general, it seems that the process itself is one major reason why many citizens would prefer hiring undocumented workers.
Well, there basically, unfortunately, is not really a way for the Mexican workers who cared for Dobbs' horses. Some of them had been there for more than 5 years. There was not any easy way to legalize them. And so these people were, we talk about unskilled labor, but the labor involved in caring for horses is actually very particular skills that not everybody has. I think that the challenges of finding workers who are not undocumented immigrants to do that work is that who wants to live above a horse barn and completely sacrifice their life for the horses of Lou Dobbs's daughter? I mean, it's just not that appealing a prospect. You're living in rural Vermont and then you're traveling every weekend to horse shows around the country where you're staying in often, I mean, just sort of camping out with all these other horse stable workers. Sometimes you'll be put up in a motel, but often you're just sleeping in a small room shared with many other workers above the barn where the horses are cared for. And as far as the pay goes, you're making about $500 a week. So for workers who are really wanting to support their families in Mexico, this was something they were prepared to do, right? They were prepared to live above the barn of the horses to support their families, and they could save this money because they also, in most cases, they don't have to pay rent. So it's a good solution if you're just really looking to save some money to support your family. But if you actually want to have a family and be with your family, it's not an ideal option. And I think for a lot of workers, they would demand much higher pay to do this kind of work. And it requires a lot of diligence. It requires interacting with these wealthy horseback riders and catering to them, and also really catering to the horses and knowing the horses and having a real understanding of medical issues to do with horses, of how to properly care for horses. And if you take a snapshot of the industry, most of the workers, if you go to a horse show, most of the workers are Latin American immigrants, and a great percentage of them don't have documents. So to shift it over so that it's mostly documented workers who are doing that work would, I think, require real moves to increase the pay of those workers to make it something that would be attractive for a less vulnerable class of workers. Mm-hmm. So the challenge is, I mean, these people who have been doing the work with the horses for years are very skilled at doing it. They do a great job, and there's clearly a demand for their labor. There's not great lines of legal workers who are clamoring to get into this industry. So I think the most practical solution I could see in terms of regularizing the industry would be to get those workers documented. And then I think what we'd see is that over time, they would be able to demand more compensation. They would be able to stand up for their rights. They would be able to stand up for especially their right to overtime pay. And I think that this would be a way of making the industry eventually attractive to other workers as well.
Mm-hmm. How is the state of the media currently in the West, particularly in the States, on continuing to scapegoat migrants for the scarcity of jobs and being responsible for many other societal ills?
In some ways, what we've seen since Dobbs left CNN is a shift even further to the right in terms of the rhetoric from the anti-immigrant movement, where, for instance, in the state of Arizona, there has been strong support from the anti-immigrant movement for repealing, for basically overt racial profiling, policies that allow for overt racial profiling. There's been a lot of recent emphasis by anti-immigrant activists on targeting the children who are born in America as American citizens to undocumented parents, and a campaign to dehumanize those Americans by calling them anchor babies and proposing to strip their citizenship through the repeal of the 14th Amendment, which allows anybody born in America to claim American citizenship. And so I think what we've seen is there has been a shift in which formerly Lou Dobbs was a spokesperson for the anti-immigrant movement and had this extraordinary platform at CNN in the media. I mean, it was a very clear victory for the people who are working for a more just media system when Dobbs was forced out of his position at CNN. But I think Lou Dobbs, in comparison to some of these other people who are now finding a platform in the media, actually appears, by comparison, somewhat reasonable. So I think this is a very worrying trend, and it ties in closely with the rise of the Tea Party movement, which helped give a platform to some of these more outlandish and fringe ideas, for instance, around the repeal of the 14th Amendment. And Dobbs was definitely a prominent spokesperson in that movement. He was invited to speak at several Tea Party events, and he did speak at those events and really embraced that opportunity to speak to Tea Party crowds. But also, we have people who are far more extreme who are being given a platform by the Tea Party movement. And I think we see also, yeah, a convergence of other right-wing agendas and an anti-immigrant agenda, for instance, in the emphasis on immigration, even in opposition to proposed health care reforms, where undocumented immigrants were being brought in as an issue in opposition to health care reform by people who were claiming that health care reform would somehow allow undocumented immigrants to take advantage of the system. So I think this scapegoating is all over the place.
Mm-hmm. What does this scapegoating of undocumented immigrants strategy do? What are its effects? What is its purpose?
Well, I think that in terms of its purpose, it helps galvanize a racist movement. It helps galvanize a racist movement generally, and it helps define who is on the outside and who is on the inside of this emerging right-wing bloc that we see emerging with the Tea Party. But I think the effects are maybe the most important thing to look at, and there has been documentation of a rise in hate crimes against Latinos. And I know that there has been a lot of recent work by activists to look at the role of terms like illegal immigrant in hate crimes. And there have been some very clear instances of people being beaten randomly, people walking. There was a case of, I think it was in Long Island, there was a young man who was walking down the street and he was attacked, and his attackers hurled a whole number of racist slurs at him, but one of them was illegal immigrant. So I think there's a real effort right now by immigrant rights activists to really look at what the term illegal does in terms of enabling not just hateful speech, but also acts that are violent and that have real effects for people who are often wrongly considered to be possibly illegal.
Mm-hmm. What about the effects that, A, facilitate keeping the wealthy wealthy and the poor poor, and that, B, encourage people to decide to be full of hate and to not seek an improved understanding of the root causes of the hardships that they may face, and of anti-immigrant rhetoric, so encouraging them to wrongfully direct their hate and anger towards immigrants.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we often see an emergence of scapegoating in times of economic hardship, especially where, I mean, this is very evident in the States right now, where you have, after decades of the wealthy getting wealthier and wealthier and wealthier, and a gap rising between the rich and poor, you have, and followed, and most recently, this extraordinary bailout of the banks and financial institutions that caused the financial crisis. So the people who were most responsible for putting America into this recessionary downturn have been rewarded with bonuses. And I think that this is something that on the right, this has been touched on, and it has actually given some momentum to the Tea Party movement because they are talking about that to some extent. But then I think there is also a phenomenal channeling of energy into anti-immigrant rhetoric and shifting the blame towards people who are most vulnerable and whom the financial backers of the Tea Party are most comfortable with being targeted, because at the end of the day, if you are one of the super wealthy individuals who is bankrolling the Tea Party, you would likely rather the attention be turned to immigrants than to your colleagues who helped cause the financial crisis.
That's right.
Comment on the importance of independent media. A lot of your work, including the article that we're focusing on today, has been made possible by independent progressive news media organizations. The Investigative Fund at the Nation Institute funded your article, Lou Dobbs, American Hypocrite.
Yeah. Well, I think that investigative journalism has never been a profitable activity, so it has always had a difficult status within the corporate media. Because while newspapers and other media outlets in the corporate media world like to boast that they have exclusive scoops, they're often very reticent to put in the necessary funding for research that sometimes won't pan out. It doesn't have any guarantee of panning out. And also, when you're going up against powerful interests, there's a real risk that these interests will retaliate through lawsuits. So investigative reporting is particularly costly, and I think especially with all of the layoffs in particularly in newspapers that used to do a bit more investigative reporting, we're really facing a crisis of who is going to fund investigative reporting, and is this most important kind of journalism that is about digging for the truth and going beyond what you can get from official press statements and what is beyond the surface, and really doing investigation and doing interviews with lots of people, doing background research, time-consuming primary document research. There's a crisis of who is going to fund it. And so the Nation Institute's investigative fund is the institution that funded me to do this research. And I think there's, at this present moment, a real importance of having institutions like that that can put up money for the kind of travel and time that is required to do a story like the story that I did on Dobbs.
Mm-hmm. Connect your answer with the reasons why it's in the interest of the multi-billion dollar industry of the mainstream media to sustain the scapegoating of immigrants strategy.
Yeah. Well, I think we have underlying the crisis with investigative journalism, there's a broader crisis with the media and democracy, because we rely on the media for information that is vital to public understanding of the issues and for basic information that is required for democratic processes in a society like ours. But at the same time, the media is run, especially if we're talking about print, the exception of public broadcasting, although that is increasingly being commercialized as well. But a lot of our media landscape is run by for-profit companies. So their primary legal requirement is to maximize profits for their shareholders. And unfortunately, there are corporations that have figured out that you can make millions and even billions of dollars by putting someone like Lou Dobbs on the air every night. And this is what CNN's business model was based on for some time. Lou Dobbs played an important role in generating profits for CNN. And now we see that Lou Dobbs has a position at the Fox Business Network. So Fox is banking on this model of Lou Dobbs' rhetoric bringing in revenues for them as well. And the problem is that while Lou Dobbs has managed to generate profits for Time Warner, the company that owns CNN, and presumably Fox Business Network, and it's owned by Rupert Murdoch, are banking on the fact that it'll bring in profits for their company, Lou Dobbs and people like him, who are often given a platform in the media, don't necessarily provide even accurate information. They spew misinformation. They scapegoat people with the least power in society, especially undocumented immigrants, if we're talking about Lou Dobbs. And the role that they end up playing is in painting an inaccurate and distorting picture of a very vital issue, social issue, which is immigration, which everybody needs to understand if we are to live together and if we are to formulate sane immigration policy. And so I think that the case of Lou Dobbs highlights a real failure in the corporate media system, because while his show was profitable and at one time was watched by more than 700,000 people a night, it also really failed to provide the kind of information that people needed about immigration. At the same time, it was one of the shows where immigration was talked about the most, but it was only talked about as a right-wing talking point, which painted immigrants as criminals, as purveyors of an imaginary leprosy epidemic. And so in the end, the public service it provided was a negative, I would say, because it misinformed people and it helped build a movement premised on scapegoating immigrants. Lou Dobbs' show often gave a platform to organizations that are considered by many people to be hate groups. I mean, the Southern Poverty Law Center has a system of classifying groups that are that are part of this anti-immigrant movement, and there were several of them that are considered hate groups by the Southern Poverty Law Center that appeared on Lou Dobbs's show and that were legitimized as expert organizations on the issue of immigration. So Lou Dobbs's show also helped consolidate a movement that sought to deny rights to immigrants, and particularly undocumented immigrants. And since Lou Dobbs left CNN, we've seen that movement continue to build. It has also important platforms, especially at Fox News. So it's not really surprising that Lou Dobbs has ended up as part of the Murdoch media empire.
Mm-hmm. Isabel McDonald has been with us for a good first half of the show. We've been focusing on Isabel's article titled Lou Dobbs, American Hypocrite. And Isabel, I want to thank you for your thorough report in the Nation magazine and for coming today.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for having me on.
Isabel McDonald is a freelance journalist and former communications director of the group Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. Her investigative journalism covering foreign policy and migration issues has been circulated by a variety of publications, including The Nation magazine, The Guardian, and El Diario. And it has also been featured on ABC Good Morning America, Democracy Now!, and Radio Canada.